Blog Talk Radio. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I am your host, Omiinka 7 Zanu. I am your advocate, one who is here to advocate for you, and I am your empress, here to serve you. How's everyone doing today? How's the African family, and how are the children? I hope you all are fair to Midland. Thank you so much for joining me on this special episode. And we're talking about Ancestors Teacher's Guide episode. We are going to be talking about how to get ready to do your ancestral research work, where you begin to start pulling out your tape recorders and diaries, recording information from your elders. Now, hold up, wait a minute. Where there are heads of household, single heads of household, without extended family there, such as a father or a grandpa or a grandma. Now, how would you be able to collect this information? Would you have to go and look in the health department and pull records? Or would you be able to go face-to-face and talk to these elderly people to get their story on the history of the family, the ancestorship? What were they like? Who were they? And how did you acquire your name? What does the name mean? And just collecting this information would mean that you would have to do some legwork. And that means you would have to start with your existing family members who are alive. But because of a lot of family members been displaced in the home, such as the father, who has been displaced more than times than not, then you could still correspond with your father wherever he's at to get his side of the family and to gather those facts so that you will be able to get ready to do your research. That's what this is all about, ladies and gentlemen. We are about the business of gathering the research, families, and making sure that we do the family justice by finding this information to put in our Acoustic records. Now that we are going to be planning for family reunions, pulling families together, every one of you should have a website that's dedicated to collecting the facts about your ancestors. What do I mean ancestors? I mean the ones who've made their transition, who have left this earth, who have still deposited their spirit on this earth, but they physically are not here. And you need to know who they are. You need to know exactly what they did while they were here. I want to make sure that you understand clearly that these are factual things that you're collecting, interviews, still currently here. Now, you can't very well interview a dead ancestor, but you certainly can talk to an aunt, a great aunt, a grandpa. You can very well talk to your mother and go and visit your father with your mother's permission, of course. And I want to say something to the mothers. Everyone should have a family tree that's drawn up with their matriarchic side of the mother and patriotic side of the father, because you belong to both of those trees. And don't go spending money on those D4 to see who your tribal members are from Africa. I'm not talking about your ancestors from Africa now, because you can go right to the health department, pull death certificates and pull marriage certificate and divorce decrees and see exactly who your loved ones were and what did they do while they were here upon this earth. Now, this particular session has been designed for teachers who want to set up something in their families. It is a curriculum that's out there that you literally can go and get through the genealogy section of ancestor.com. It's a full curriculum that will tell you how to set up your research, because of the fact that we are finding that we were here on this diaspora, on this side of North America, and we had family members that lived in the South who deposited something here. It's best to start here in North America first, so we can look at the 50-odd states and see where we came from. Who is on our mother's side? Are those names of our slave masters? And do we not have our original name? It's very important that we should look at the fact that we are going to be putting together a tree. And that tree stems from your mother's side and your father's side. You might want to take some time to go to grandma's house with your mother, of course. And mother, you might want to go there too and say, Mom, where are we from? And which line of the tribe of Judah did we come from? And are we connected to any of these indigenous people here of North America? And do you remember any of their names? And once she starts to give you the names, you can start the process of researching in records in church buildings. Churches maintain a large portion of marriage certificates, divorce decrees, and sometimes they even have the christening documentation of when an individual was christened and dedicated. You can start with death certificates. You can start collecting those obituaries and looking at when they died and where you would have to go. Death certificate that will tell you a lot about who your ancestors were. But it's very vital that you set up some type of structure in the family where you post it online and make it relevant so that all family members can access it. If it's through Ancestry.com, then go out and sign up for the trial period. And when that trial period runs out, renew it and make sure that you can access it again, because once you stop paying after it expires, then it shuts down. But make sure access to it that keeps the membership going. And that's the biggest problem. People let those memberships expire after they've gathered all that documentation, then they can't access it. One of the things that you might want to also recognize is that there are military records and census records that you can start looking at. And Ancestry.com does a very good job of helping you to get started. Now, a lot of information in the military records, a large portion as to whether or not they fought in World War I, World War II, or the Civil War, and a lot of them have unclaimed sources that might still be deposited there in the military. So you can find out if they were buried with dignitary or not. You can find out a lot about your family through looking at the military records. Now, the death certificates also give you a lot of. If you were a member of a Native American tribe, it'll also tell you how they classified you. Did they classify you as a mulatto? Did they classify you as a colored person or a Negro? You can look on the actual birth certificate. Now, I know you're probably going to say, well, my father never had a birth certificate. Well, my mother never acquired a birth certificate. That could all be very well because a number of us were delivered by midwives. Say that, midwives. You're going to hear a lot of various different words, and you're going to have to try to remember these words, and these are your high-frequency words. A number of young people may not know anything about midwives, but us older people understand that nurses came to the home that were called midwives, and they delivered as different family members, and there was no birth certificate, and just documented it, and the health department, had them draw up an actual birth certificate for you if you were delivered by a midwife. So it's very vital that you should understand if you got to have your birth certificate, have them draw up one for you. Don't go along without a birth certificate because it's required in everything that you do. If you want to travel outside of this country, you will need your birth certificate. And for many other things, when you go and get your Social Security card, they sometimes require that you have a birth certificate or a death certificate if you are deceased and someone else is trying to obtain it. But what we really want to understand is that our ancestors are beckoning us to remember them. The living to stay in touch with the dead. So you're going to need a teacher, somebody to take control of this whole orchestrated thing. Say, for example, you are planning a family reunion. You definitely want to do this legwork before planning a family reunion. You want to go and gather all the information on the eldest person in your family and ask them, did I have a grandmother? Who was she? And who was your mother? And do you know where they lived at? You can start with the process of where they live and then start checking the census and cross-referencing to their marriage certificate and whether or not they were free people. Did they own their own farm or were they just sharecropping? And if they were independent owners of their farm, were they ever enslaved or were they free people? You want to gather all this information and begin to set up a timeline. You might want to start with yourself first, setting up a timeline of all of those things, charting it out. The day you first was born, the day you entered into elementary school, the day you graduated, own timeline up about yourself first. And then start with your loved ones and setting up a timeline of when events occur. Events and transitioning of rituals are very important. Did you have a dedication? What time and when did that dedication happen? When were you baptized? These things must go in your timeline, and you must keep a timeline of your mothers and your fathers while you're here in this earth, because those things are very important while you're trying to create an actual tree of life of your family members. Every one of those dates are important because it's going to get you closer and closer to finding loved ones who might not be on your timeline and who might not be on your family tree. It might be a cousin that you left out. Cousin can direct you to a grandpa. It might be an adopted child that came to stay with your grandma and grandpa who leads you back to their ancestors. It's vital that you keep good records and that you leave one person in charge who you're calling the teacher who's going to instruct everyone as to how to give any documentation that they might have over to the teacher so she can document it, put it on a timeline, and file it away and have the documentation showing that she has kept information for you. Now, you cannot do this alone. You might want to have a partner or somebody to work with you and do, start the research right along with you. Now, you're planning a family reunion, right? okay, you need to have a host of supporters who's going to help you. And with each one of them helping you, assign them and delegate work to them so that they can start the process of gathering these facts and making a preparation for the family reunion. Doesn't have to be anything big when you first start. Remember, you're mainly trying to get this information on their family tree. And with your committees, delegate and assign different things to them that they ought to do, and then making sure that they complete the task on time. Because remember, you're on a timeline, and you're making sure that these things get done, and you project how long it's going to take to actually plan for this family reunion. Grandma may be up in age. Grandma wants to see all her great-great-grands. Grandma wants you to plan something before she transitions. She could go in any moment, any day. So you can't keep putting it off saying, oh, I'll get to it later. Go ahead and start the process. It could be so unique. Have a committee member collect old pictures and then duplicate them so that they're going to go in your memory book. And all of these people that you contact on your phone tree, have a phone tree set up so you can call each one of these family members and ask them, can they contribute any copies of their pictures to make up your memory book, so that as you collect these pictures, you will be introduced to new family members that you didn't know. Remember now, you have a leader. The leader is called the teacher, who's going to be orchestrating all of the delegation and making sure that the planning is done properly. You might even have a scheduler planner so that you complete these and execute these process. Number one, you're having a family gathering. You can call it a family gathering to talk about the family members. You can even talk about location. You can have a committee to determine which is the best location. If grandma lived in North Carolina and you're trying to find her roots, you might want to say, well, who's still living in North Carolina? Let's center the city around that city and go and have someone call and check it out, check out the hotels, check out the facilities there. And if that person is still living there, that is a part of the family, ask them if you can delegate some responsibility to them to go and to actually book the hotel after they've taken a look at it, of course, and determine if it's sufficient for their use. And then go to the press and ask the press to come out to do an interview of the family and to even do a press release of taking pictures of the family. So all of this gets documented in the newspaper. Now, you're publicizing to other family members that might be in the city that this family of the Gray family had their family reunion there. Somebody may see it, disagree, and say, hey, that's my auntie. Those are my. And then this is a way to trigger those people to come together and say, you're part of my family and I'm a part of yours. Sometimes that's when you first discover that you're connected with somebody else. But if you don't do these things properly, you might look over a family member who's been lost for a long, long time and who has not been connected or introduced to his family. It's very vital that family members come together and have a particular gathering. Will let them know that who you are and that the next person at that particular family gathering, you develop your team of people who want to take over for next year, and you assign them roles so they know who they are. And you publicize it to your group that these are our committee people that will be sponsoring our family gathering maybe the next year or maybe the next 5 years or 2 years, whichever you choose. But you definitely have to keep this moving, because if you don't, the momentum will stop, and you will not have a family gathering on those dates that you had, you know, suspected you would have them. But it's very vital that you understand that just because fathers are no longer in the home Mothers, you have to still acknowledge those fathers and acknowledge his family's background as well as your own. A child has a spouse, a child has a father, though he's not living there. A child needs to know their lineage on both sides. Now, with this teacher being ahead, she might even want to run some webinars and go online for those distant relatives that she cannot reach, go online and run some webinars through Zoom or Skype, or she might even use WebEx and have her specialized classes where they can meet up so she can delegate to all of these group members who volunteer to be part to help her to do this research as well as to help her family reunion. It's always good to have a family reunion around developing your family tree, because you can present your family tree to the members of the family reunion and they get acquainted with their loved ones. They fall in love all over again with their loved ones. They treasure this family tree. They're glad that they're part of this. So next, you research and discover further into your depths of your family tree. So Ancestry.com is a great place to start, and it's a great place to have membership. And now that I'm plugging in Ancestry.com, I'm saying this because this is where mostly everyone goes in order to get insight on where to start. Now, for those of you who are military brats, you definitely want to go and get those military documents through them for your loved ones. Now, you have to also understand that they did the census. You definitely want to look at what years your grandma and grandpa was living or married and look at the census during that time, because they were going out to people's homes to take the census, and they had to report who was the head of the household, how many children were in the family, and document everyone in the family. So that way you get an idea of those loved ones who might have been extended loved ones who were staying with the mother and father, who might not be actually children of the mother and father, but adopted children. Now, one of the things you're going to have to really, really hone in on, and that is to publicize this family reunion. Explain that you are having this family reunion, homage to grandma, one of your elders, family members, and for those of you who have not met her, please come out to grace her stage and to give her the right hand of fellowship. Please come out so you can, you know, give grandma a great big hug. Grandma may be on her last leg. Grandma may be in the nursing home, and she might even be in hospice, but you don't want to alarm the people that she's getting ready to make her transition. Let them know that she's still alive and kicking, and this is a great time for them to grace the stage and meet her. That will make them want to come out, and especially your activities. You must download a brochure that you tentatively put together with the activities that you are scheduled to have for that family reunion. And don't be sarcastic and putting things in there you know you're not going to do, but put projected things that you can do during your family reunion. Now, you're going to have to start this a year in advance. Don't let money be the reason why everything's canceled. Black people always want to say, let's just cancel it. We don't have the money to do it. No. What you do, the Earth Committee people, you be the first one to put up a donation and keep adding to it until you have enough money on rooms at a hotel and a facility that you're going to have it in the hotel where you're going to have your presentation. Make sure that is paid for. Make sure that room is paid for that you're going to use for your dining area, for your banquet. Usually they give you a speaking room if you're going to order so many meals. Go ahead and pay for half the meals and take the remaining balance of the meals for all the people you've invited, a lot cheaper and doable, where they can show up. And even better yet, for those of you who could do more, put more money down. Don't let money be the issue. when you first send out the invitation, don't have that in their face. Let them know you're working out the financial arrangements and that it's going to be feasible for everyone to show up. This is the first one. If this is the first one, you don't walk away because they don't have the funds for it. If you're planning a year in advance, each one of your members that are in your group, you have them vow that they're going to deposit $20 in the kitty every month for about 6 months to a year if you're planning like that. That way you have money put aside, your working capital money, so that money is not an issue for those people who don't have a lot of money and who want to come. Everybody to be there. If they possibly cannot, then cover them. Cover them and let them know that they have been given a grant. And as they feel comfortable with you giving them a grant, they don't feel like they have to pay it back, fine. You can always do a GoFundMe for your reunions, especially if they're extremely big and you are trying to bring all of the family members together. But you have to remember that this takes planning. You just can't scratch your head and do it the 6 months before. It has to be done 6 months to a year before because you're developing paraphernalia. You're developing T-shirts that are being printed with the family's name on it, hats that have the family logo on it. And you're getting activities together, whether it be bingo. You're getting all kinds of prizes together for that bingo. You must have some entertainment. It cannot just be to sit and talk and hold hands and no activities. You must have an activity committee that works on putting these activities together. And preferably have them in a good season where if you're going to have it inside with all activities inside, then make sure you got the space for it. If not, if you're planning it for outside, make sure that you have an alternative place in case the weather is inclined. So you are running this organization, and the head teacher is giving out instruction, and she's delegating, and you can go to her when things are not clear to you. But planning is very important, and if you don't have the planning done, people don't want to come to something that's half planned. They want to make sure coming to something that is planned in advance, and they want to make sure that they can go and sit down to a meal. So you definitely want to make sure you check out that particular, give them an option. If they have one or two types of meat, give them an option to choose between steak or chicken so they can feel like they have some choices. But at the same time, keep your prices down, making sure that you're not over your head. Sometimes people get over their head and buying things. They get over their head in trying to have things that they cannot afford. It's very vital that you should understand that your very first one needs to be structured and order needs to take place. Don't go way over your head in doing these things because you'll soon regret it. And you'll say, well, oh my God, we did too much and nothing turned out right. So it's very vital. Now, our phone lines are 760-539-3247. You can call in at any time and voice your opinion. Stay tuned. Welcome back, family. Thank you so much for joining me on this particular segment. And we are talking about ancestorship and how do you find your loving, lost loved ones, your deceased loved ones, to put them on the family tree. Starting off with the timeline, we make sure that we start with our own timeline. What were some of the important things that happened in our lives that we can put on the timeline? Our name, looking at our mother's name and our father's name, patriotic mother and our patriotic father. Now, we know that a lot of people have been doing DNA testing to relate to which tribe they came from out of Africa. We're not asking you to do that. We're talking about your ancestors on this side of North America, on Turtle Island, where your mothers and grandparents left their knapsacks. Who were they? What are their names? Do you have any photographs of them? Can you start collecting them from loved ones so that you can create a pool of pictures and categorize them, and you can also name them? So when you do your family tree, you set your tree up with the eldest person on the tree. And you go down to the youngest person and the family members who had children, the ones who were deceased. All of this is displayed on your family tree. I did a family tree that was made of wood. I actually mounted the pictures on there, and I laminated the pictures right there on the tree with their names so that they never can be removed. You know how family members are. They walk up to the board and it's, oh, was me when I was young. I don't want anyone to see that picture. And they snatch it off, and you never know where they went. I decoupaged those pictures on there so that they would not be removed. And people were so frustrated. Oh, my God, why did she put that picture of all pictures? It's you. It's once. It's a person who you once were. So let's not laminate over it. Let's just go with the flow and understand that these are family members. Now, and don't leave out step people. If you have some stepsisters, make sure you put them in there and graft them in there. And don't go talking about step this and have that. If you grew up in a family, and if you were a planted family member or grafted family member that was adopted, put yourself in there and be a part of that family, because we're trying to show how we are all connected. And it's very vital that we have a leader. Don't just throw it to caution and say, well, whoever should take over. No, we must have a teacher, someone that can instruct you and delegate to you what you're doing. Remember, we are collecting information on the dead and the living. So we don't want just all deceased loved ones to be on our timeline, but we want some living loved ones to be on our timeline, and we want those living people to be documented. And we want everyone to be substantiated. And if we are going out on the census bureau, we want to put down dates that they were married. We want to put down our deceased loved ones and obituaries. You can also get information off of your obituaries and start collecting obituaries from all the funerals you go to. They're very valuable in giving dates of when the loved ones were deceased. So it is up to the living to stay in contact with the dead. It really is. And this is just a little formation to get you going for those family reunions. Yes, you know what I'm talking about, the ones where we get all excited about them. But we must have groups of committees formalized. You cannot put this on the teacher for her to do it all by herself. Teacher, you must delegate and set up organizations and various organizations to do different things. Don't have everything overlapping where two people are doing the same thing. Spread out and delegate these particular organizations. And as you set them up, make sure that you give homage to them at your presentation when you are doing the family history. Bring your whole committee up front. Give them the homage that they deserve. Make sure that they're acknowledged so that next year they'll want to work with you again and they won't think that you're just trying to drag them out and work them and get all the credit for yourself. Make sure you save room for your committee. And don't go in there talking about me, I, personal pronoun. Let it be a us and a communal setting. Family reunions can be really grand to prepare for. And especially if you're starting out a year in advance, you have all this time ahead of you, you think. But you must get on a schedule and have someone to monitor and document timelines of when things have to be completed. If you know that people are coming in from out of town, you've got to go check out those hotels and those meeting rooms where you're going to have your banquet. That has to happen immediately, almost a year in advance. You book that. And if there's money that needs to be put down, go ahead, put your money down, your security deposit. You'll get it back when those individuals pay for their dinner. Now, you don't want to go way out on a limb. You want to find the best catering with the less amount of money, but don't skimp on everything so it's not even worth the while. Make sure you find a legitimate hotel that has ability to serve food and that will bring in the kind of food you want, a variety. If it's a buffet, make sure you have several different meats on it. If it's a sit-down, make sure they have a choice. Now, as I told you before, your committee people are going to be valuable to you. Have them put up $50 each when they first start. And when they put their $50 up each, you can set up a payment plan for all of your loved ones to pay $25 a month towards their bill. If they don't have it, don't sweat yourself for it. Put the money in there for them and tell them not to fret over it, that they're still invited and they're still on the list to be an actual recipient at that banquet. Don't let money be the cause of you eliminating someone's spot. Never, ever. Even if you have to go and do a GoFundMe page, you can solicit for donations for those people who don't have the funds. Don't let the people know up front you're doing that because it'll be a case. And that's not what this is all about. You want to make sure that the eldest person, your seniors who are coming, that they don't have to pay. You go ahead and front your seniors so they will show up. And it won't be a case of them feeling bad because they financially couldn't afford it because they're on a fixed income. And let them know up front, all seniors' meals will be covered. And after you set up your hotel space, book about 4 or 5 rooms that are secured. You can probably secure that through some of your membership that you have through your hotel or put down the security deposit on it and see if you can get the hotel to discount the prices for the hotel. Now, you're not going to do a whole string of rooms. You're going to make those people's homes available in that particular city and state who would like to offer their homes as an option. but you also have the hotels as well. So they have a choice. Now, then you want to definitely check on your printing, because you got to have some things that will go out in the form of flyers and brochures, because you're going to have to put a brochure together to let them see all of these outstanding things you plan on having at that banquet. And you then begin to collect their addresses, email, or what have you, and then you upload your brochures to those emails to show them what they're going to be missing if they don't show up. And let them know what your itinerary is, what is your, and let them also know that there's some activities that are going to be available for the children. So you definitely want to save a day that is a free time after a meal, the afternoon being a free time, and you might even want to plan it in a resort somewhere where there's activities already planned that you don't have to engage in. And if not, you're going to have to buy some paraphernalia for activities like bingo, dominoes, spoons, to create your own. But a lot of people don't want that extra work, so they go somewhere where there may be an amusement park and there's activities already, and you just plan to meet somewhere at that particular facility. If it's going to be one particular place, sometimes you can go to that organization and say, I'm having a family reunion. Can we meet here for our banquet? And they'll give you a discount on prices. You know what to do. Put your committee on it and let them report back to you, teacher. It's very vital ahead, because anything without a head will become a monster. And that's why I'm telling you this. And we have a phone call here at 864. Let me see who we get here. 864, you're in the air. How can I help you?
Peace, how you doing, sis? Hello?
Oh, I'm doing fine. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Just,
would you like
joining
to say
in,
something?
No, ma'am. Well, not as of right now. I'm just kind of, I just called in and was just trying to see which direction the conversation was going, actually.
Well, we're talking about those ancestors and getting them together so that people can start a tree and developing a family tree so they can pass down some legacies to the children, as well as to, have the family reunion. So we're trying to get people started early so they won't wait till the last minute.
Well, I think that's a worthwhile conversation.
Oh, yeah. We've been looking at this for a while now. How do we look for our indigenous background? We've been doing a lot of that, trying to find out which tribe or nation we are connected to. And a lot of people have gained a lot of information, but they haven't did anything with it. And I'm cautioning them to look at setting up a timeline, going out to ancestral.com, then documenting it, so that you can share it with your other, loved ones. And we're also talking about demographics changing, how there are more single heads of the household now, and you don't find a lot of extended family there, so the children don't know who their ancestors are, and I'm cautioning them to go out to those grandmothers that are in the city or close by and start interviewing them and gathering them.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at a family reunion in the future?
Well, actually, we one of my sides of the family, we don't, I guess, have family reunions as we do on the other side of my family. But I think for us as a black, as an African, indigenous, whatever we call ourselves, we must be honest to say that, hey, we have been torn, we've been broken, more so than any other people in the whole world, as it relates to being torn from, your culture, having an organic culture, having an organic way to express yourself, my family, our family, our people that are, melanated, dark-skinned, nappy hair, bald nose, but we do know that we've had I guess we're in a place that we would call sometimes a melting pot. And getting back to the roots, because I'm, you know, pretty sure that's what you're talking about, getting back to the roots of everything, even as we're talking about the highlights of our family, the highlights of tradition, we must talk about, you know, the things that weren't so good in our families or in our traditions or in our cultures, you know, because I know also I've, you know, seen cultures and even been a part of cultures that sit around and drink and, you know, sit around and maybe do things that aren't as productive. But, you know, when we trace and go back to the zenith of our lineage, you know, going back and looking at the ancestors that were productive, you know, not saying that we can't look at our ancestors that had certain vices, certain things that plagued them, but making sure that when we do, we aren't going to repeat the same process. We aren't going to repeat the same stagnation to get us out of that so we can be more productive. Because even what you're saying inside establishing family reunions, inside establishing this connection, this communication, I know families that have been, that are torn, that are broken, they don't talk to each other. You know, families where mama's over here, daddy's over there. But, you know, actually coming together and mending those wounds or those broken spots, and rather than highlighting and encouraging or supporting the things that have been badly wounded, you want to kind of, you know, hurry and try to repair that. You know, that's why we want to highlight it, is that we want to repair it. And, you know, this conversation is a conversation.
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying about that repair, and that's coming out loud and clear. And I think that the one thing that we have to remember is that our race of people, the indigenous, known by the way we love one another. That was our claim to fame. That was our mark of excellence, how we love one another. We loved hearty and we loved hard. And I am trying to reflect back on letting people remember that we were the people that had the ability to love. When we was down and out, we didn't ask them what their race was. We took them in, we fed them, we maintained them. And that is our claim to fame. And if we can get back to that and say, hey, look, we are about the business of trying to heal our own families, because right now we hate our own families more than enemies. And if we can come to grips with the fact that if we can forgive our enemies, how come we cannot adjust the situation and say, bro, I'm going to give you a pardon on that. I'm going to give you a pardon on that. And where we had a hatchet, we made a hatchet, we're going to pull that hatchet out and say, we're going to forget that and forgive. And if our black people would do rituals, you know, we wouldn't have to do a lot of work, but our rituals will actually accentuate bringing those ancestors here, and the ancestors will be present in the middle of our activities, heal without us doing a single thing, because their whole reason for coming here is to bring us into the picture. And so now that we're in the picture, our ancestors, they can come back and say, well, y'all got it right. Finally, you know, you brought all the brothers and sisters together, so I'm a gap for you guys. So I think somewhere along the line, we have got to start having gatherings with rituals. I just started that this year, where every time we had a gathering, I made sure that there was a ritual in the midst of it, because I can't do it all alone. But those rituals have a tendency to have power to mend and to heal the brokenhearted and to bring them together and see how valuable it is for us to come together, that there's nothing more precious than when we come together and unite and make a nation. And we keep forgetting about this is the beginning of nation building.
Right. That's absolutely right. And when we look at, you know, the more that I study, and I am a student of Nile Valley culture in Africa, when you look at Nile Valley, Egypt, Kemet, that was the longest thriving civilization us as black people had, you know, known to any man. But we actually can document, and we actually have, you know, literature. We have certain things that are still here to show that, hey, these were black people, and they were working together. We came together as several tribes, several nations to build as one. You know, so even, you know, even when we get in talking about modern day religion, and a lot of people that I know that are black or that are African, whatever they call themselves, you know, they hold high to this European figure of Jesus. And when we say, when you said we love our enemies, you know, that reminds me of when, you know, Ashraf Kwesi, the brother Ashraf Kwesi said, our enemy.
Oh, yeah. I know Ashraf. I know him personally. I've been at his home. And, yeah, we were down in Texas together, him and his wife, and my family was down there. And we actually had a meeting together. So I met him at the university. He was speaking, and I bought all his tapes and stuff. So I do subscribe to Ashraf Kwesi. And see, the other thing is that here we got a problem, brother, and we got people talking about descendants of slaves. I'm saying, to us to carry that label to talk about descendants of slaves when we know they were not empowered. It only seeks to diminish us by using that title, descendant of slaves. And I kept saying to myself, I'm not going to call myself a descendant of a slave because that's nothing to be proud of, but the indigenous first world people, because we know we descended from, you know, the priesthood, just like Dr. Ben indicated, you know, over in Timbuktu was all where all learning started. And all the learning that started there, Homer and Aristotle and all the people came in and got the training, and they had to drink the hemlock because they said, don't you tell us anything about these black people who gave you this learning, because, you know, we don't want to hear that. So they killed off their people because they came to Timbuktu to get our education.
Absolutely right. And that's Carter G. Wilson had the stolen legacy. And that's what goes mm-hmm. on with our people so many times nowadays, and we're wondering why we are dismembered. My priest, my teacher, he has a book called Remembering Althea, or Remembering Althea.
What's your teacher's name?
His name is Ankh Banu.
I think I know him.
Mm-hmm. Ankh
Banu. Does he teach the Medinetra classes? Is he the one to do the Medinetras?
Yes, he does, but he doesn't do it on a public platform. He does it basically amongst us, the students, and, you know, those that are interested. But mm-hmm. in his book, it actually talks about how us as African people not only looked at our physical ancestors, but looked at our relatives as it relates to, you know, nature itself, you know, mm-hmm. relatives as it relates to air, you know, how if air, you know, stopped communicating with us, then we would surely die. If water mm-hmm. went away from us, we would surely die. So looking at all these components as we're looking at ourselves within the Creator, you know, not looking mm-hmm. at Jesus or looking at Allah, all these other figures that were given to us by our enemy, by our oppressor, but looking at doing it the way that our ancestors did it. And that's, you know, the important part. And I feel like we are just, I'm not going to say the primary stages or the beginning stages, but we are, and it's very important, as you stated, the Iriaket or the ritual, the things that we do daily, you know, is going to be very important. But we are still, I can say for myself, a lot of times we're still on the plantation. We still are
We can't be caught up into religion. And you know, we know that ties us to something we have to be is connected to a way of life like our ancestors were. In the Kemetic mm-hmm. teaching, they had a way of life. It was not religion tying them to something. You did this because you wanted to circumvent consequences and circumstances. So it wasn't that you didn't do wrong because it was a sin. You didn't do wrong because it created consequences and, you know, caused you to delay in your growth. So a lot of people think that they have to be religious. You don't have to be religious. You just have to be righteous and holy, you know. And you got a lot of people that want to join these groups of religion, and then they'll say, what religion do you recommend, or what religion are you in? And I said, I'm not in any of it. I'm in a way of life. And the way of life started with the Kemetic teaching, and the Kemetics laid down the way of life for us, and they lived by it. And that's why they were so prosperous, and they advanced them. Now we got a situation where, you know, we bankrupt, and everything is, you know, there is no standard being lifted up, you know.
That's right. That's right. And our bigger, the reason why we're seeing the bigger, I guess, destruction is because the inner destruction is going on. We spit on our elders. We spit on those that came before us. You know, a lot of people, you know, it's good that you and I, or, you know, the very few others can speak highly of, you know, the work that our ancestors put in and made sure that not only us remember, but the whole world, you know. But rather than that, we want to say that we're everything else other than what we truly are, you know. And we wonder why, you know, nature in itself is not good to us. We wonder why, you know, our enemy is no good to us, is because we're no good to ourselves. And we have to first love ourselves. We have to first love ourselves. If we don't love ourselves, we shouldn't be surprised that our enemy, you know, is, because that's what his nature is. You know, that's what he's only doing what he's supposed to do. You know, the lion doesn't coddle the hyena.
He's on his job.
Right. The lion doesn't coddle the hyena. The lion looks at the hyena, the zebra, as prey. And it would be very mindful for those that, you know, are prey to look at those that are the predators and preying upon them and remove themselves from those situations. So, like you said, the main way we do that is by ritual, by implementing ritual inside culture, being excited about that. We look at our kids nowadays, you know, it'd be good if our kids were singing songs about ancient times, or singing songs about the good old days when we were prosperous in Tulsa, Oklahoma, or going back to those days. But rather than that, our kids are singing songs praising white people. Our kids are singing songs praising drugs. They praise everything that is the enemy of not only them, but us as a whole. You know, and, you know, that's why it is very important that we stay on, you know, on the job with shows like this, with, you know, community events, with outreach programs.
Oh, you know what? You know, we've been on for 9 years, coming up in May, and we started off, you know, my brother and I and his mother as a family, and we did our rituals and our libations, and he also did some energy readings because he's an energy healer. It was a complete show where we tried to offer up oracle readings, and eventually we got to a point where we were like a holistic show. And I'm just coming back off of a sabbatical because I had literally been on too many shows, and I was trying to handle this, and I came with the fact that, you know, we're coming up on our 10th anniversary. I'm not going to, you know, walk away from the show because we have a lot of transcripts that are really, really meaningful. And I think that, you know, if it's a family-oriented show, it's going to make a difference. And we have consistent, you know, followers that follow us. And now we get into oracle readings, and we talk about how you can learn to read oracles, and we try and get the people excited about understanding that, you know, having oracle readings need to be in your life, because that's, you know, the reason why people are falling faint, because they don't know what the futures hold for them, the oracle reading. So I've been teaching on that, you know.
Yes, ma'am, and that's absolutely right. Divination is very important. Divination is you know, putting ourselves at a place where, you know, where we are able to understand how divination works, and understanding how to apply divination. you know, understanding how to see certain signs, because after we raise our awareness, divination or nature will speak to you. Nature will tell you not to do certain things. Nature itself will communicate with us because we are akin
right.
to all those. We are akin to the forces of nature that will speak through divination. You know, we are akin to our
you know,
ancestors,
that is so true. We got a problem where we have not learned our lesson where the Native Americans, they did not seek to find a solution for healing through the traditional way of medicine, the allopathic. They went into the woods and they started allowing the Mother Nature to show them the actual elements that would actually heal, and they relied upon them. And here we are, this epidemic of diabetes and high blood pressure, and we've fallen right in the trap knowing that our greatest equalizer that the man holds is being imparted with possibly extinction. They don't want the black man to produce children, so they give him a sedative for high blood pressure that prevents him from even having, you know, to be able to produce a child. So then we don't understand that this is a prey on us, and we fall right into it because we think somebody wants to heal us.
Oh, absolutely. That's absolutely right. Absolutely right. And I think that's why it's important.
What do you recommend for the family? If you had to recommend something for the family right now in order for them to come together and to recognize the importance of rituals and being able to bring the family together to do our own healings, to talk to our family about finance and to give them what they need as a source, what do you think would be the one thing that we should do?
I would think it would be to find those that are actually genuinely interested in this organic knowing, and then actually lift it up through our culture, through our songs, through our arts, through our writings. Remind it constantly every day where we are, you know, constantly doing things, where we are on our way to work or while we're working in our crop. We're singing songs that, you know, that our ancestors sang while they were building or while they were doing things. I think remembering is going to be the most important thing for our people to do. And I can recall Malcolm X said, you know, the American Negroes say, "What am I going back to Africa for? I hadn't left anything in Africa." And he said, "Well, you left your mind in Africa." You know, and when we look at right now, not saying that our people can't, and we haven't done great things all throughout the world, but on the Nile Valley and all throughout Africa, we definitely showed our, you know, greatness. We showed, mm-hmm. you know, we proved the point.
Well, you know,
there.
I'm trying to figure out, why do we have so many people now, when you speak of what we did in the Kemetic era, when we were high priestess and we were kings and we were a country in duality, when you speak to our brothers now, they want to call you the Hotep brothers and sisters who are not doing anything but giving lip service. And then they want to say, well, that's at a time when we were great. What are we doing now? And initially, I wanted to tell them that you cannot plan your current future now without looking into what you once were. Because, you know, if you don't know what you were capable of, you cannot reproduce that in the future. But nevertheless, they got all tied up into this indigenous person, but all they can do is define it. They don't have a way of life. The Native Americans won't let them fellowship with them and smoke the peace pipe. They don't have a prayer. All they do is talk about, well, now we know we're indigenous. Okay, now we know that we're indigenous. So what? Is somebody getting ready to give us some land? Is our condition in that? We got the same broken treaties we had back there when those Native
right.
Americans were in,
that's right.
in action. So the best we could do is look to Africa because there is some hope there. We know that when they were there and ruling, there was a lifestyle, and we can look
right.
at the curriculum and take it away and reproduce it. We have nothing from the Native Americans that we can use.
Right, and I was just thinking about that because there's this one guy that calls himself a scholar, but he was saying
you're
that.
Talking about Dan.
His name is Min Kao, and he actually is saying that America is Egypt, and basically the reason why you have these folks is because they are still caught up in, you know, loving what the European has, but they still think it's hope in what the European has here in America. You understand? They don't understand that the way that this white man had his come up was going to Africa, was making a connection to Africa. The majority of all the world's most renowned minerals and resources, they go to Africa to extract. So imagine when we get ourselves right, when we stop spending our dollar or find a reason to spend our dollar with the European, and we go back to it. This is just the change in mind. But as long as we are saying that, hey, I'm indigenous or I'm here, I'm part of America, I'm not from Africa, this is on. And when I look at this rhetoric, it has to be a rhetoric birthed by some European somewhere, by some other.
Yes.
That's
the same thing I was thinking, because I said, you know, even though I acknowledged that we were indigenous and first world people, I said, let's not get too far off on the left on this and start, you know, smelling ourselves, because we haven't accomplished anything by finding that out, and neither have we gained any momentum. The best we can do is know that and know that there was a time once when we were here and we were ruling here as well as in Africa, and let's not forget if that's where our source comes from, and we'll go to the original source and then try to establish something there. So we got brothers that are saying, oh, but you cannot say that you came from Africa. You weren't a part of that slavery, and you're not from Africa. Well, then where the heck are we from if we're not from Africa?
Right,
now you
right.
got this whole thing going. You ain't from Africa. You're not African, and, you know, you're a different breed of people. Okay, now you got them telling you, you're different. So doesn't this sound like a trick? They've already did some readings on the fact that Europe is getting ready to go into the Ice Age. Europe is getting ready to experience some terrible, terrible inclined weather where they won't be able to grow anything there because of the Ice Age. They are trying to get out of Europe to go to Africa. So what do you think they're going to do? Push the people out of occupy that land, because they won't be able to live in Europe, because they won't be able to grow food, and the climate is going to kill them off. So we know something is getting ready to happen. They already predicted it, and now here we're talking about not going to Africa, and they're going to take our places in Africa? And we're still sitting here in America knowing that we're bankrupt and knowing that the dollar is diminishing, and we're talking about still getting something, believing that this treaty that they overturned, that they're going to fix it for us. How are they going to fix something for us when they can't fix it for themselves? I just worry about that. I really do.
That's absolutely right, and I think that kind of goes on online because a couple of years ago, it was stated that I think down in Texas they were actually taking slavery out of, you know, the historical content of slavery out of the history books. And I think even with this whole rhetoric, it's right on in line with what the European is trying to do. And it's like when you got black people saying that, hey, there were no slave ships and we didn't come as slaves and, you know, we didn't. And that rhetoric is going to turn into a one where, hey, we were never slaves, but we actually know that there was a. We had our ancestors went through some very rough times. And to say that never happened. It's almost like you're, you know, you having an ancestor that got burned up in the house fire, and you never acknowledging that pain that they've gone through. And this is why we still see when nature lashes out against us, whether it be through disease, whether it be through our enemies coming. When you look at my eye, I looked at, you know, your heading, you know, your picture, it's my eye. This is what balance comes into. And this is where
I studied with a star set. I did study with a star set, and I started off with Kemetic. So I started learning the Kemetic teaching first with Rana Nefer Amen, And I credit him for my whole, because I was lost and didn't know my black self until I started studying to understand it from Ron and Nefer, and he laid the foundation for me. So all that I know came from them, and then Chief Metohochi, you know, I started studying with them because I had moved. But I view both of them as being equally important, and they're both basically the same, just different, slight different names, you know.
And like I said,
I look at the laws of Maya. I got to stop looking at the Ten Commandments and look at the 142 confessions of Maya, you know.
And see, even when we look at Maya is both good and also bad. I remember when I came up and my grandmother would tell me, excuse me for saying, but it was to take, and also my father, they would say a hard head makes a soft ass or a soft behind, you know, and that means that if you do something that you're not supposed to do, this is where the scales balance themselves out. And even when we look at the collective of our people, we wonder why the cops
even that scale, your heart must be sound as light as a feather. You know, where people say, well, am I going to get judged? You're judged every day, but there is a process you're going to go there too. And that's part of the comedic teaching that they teach. And we have a lot of people that keep saying that those were the great days when our ancestors were great. Well, if they're great then, their cosmic record is residing within us. We still have that capability of being great
DNA.
As well as
Absolutely.
They were.
That's what DNA is. DNA is that network, that stuff that we have within us that, you know, even my appearance, it looks like my father. My father is an ancestor now. My father looked like his father, which he's an ancestor. So even though they have passed away from the physical, they still have left this coded information within me. If it bestows itself inside my physical, guess what? They passed down certain things that weren't so good, and also there were certain qualities and characteristics. And like you say, this is why it's important to have these conversations with older people in your community, having a family reunion to remind you or to remember to put things back together. And as you're speaking, talking about the condition of your heart, if your heart ain't in the right place, then you'll be doing it just to be peeing in the wind. But you want to do it and put things back together in order for justice to restore, you know, the virtue to restore the plight of your family. We are the Harus. We are the young Harus now. We are the children that carry the torch because we are the ones that are granted the opportunity to give life. If we are still here until we become an ancestor. So while we are here, we have to fight Sutesh. We have to fight off Set. We have to fight off the negative conditions, the negative ways, in order to make ourselves pure. So when we go
well,
to
see,
the scales,
most
daily,
people don't know that there is no such thing as the devil. And when you try to explain that to them, they say, well, then why do we have so much evil in the world? I said, well, God permits evil simultaneously, whereas he permits good. When you speak of good, you ordinarily speak of evil. They exist in duality because God wouldn't create a foe greater than himself. So there is no such thing as the devil. And God is not putting the devil in the midst of a situation to fight with him. He's allowed good. That's why when you do the oracles, you speak to evil and ask evil to let up off good for a while. And evil say, well, then what are you going to sacrifice? What are you going to give me to let up off good? And when you give that sacrifice, you allow evil to let up off of good for a while. But they must always exist in duality.
This is right. That's very right. That's why
it's so sad because you got people that they like, oh, no, we got a devil. We definitely got a devil. See, then when you take on that concept that there's something out there that's greater than yourself, there's nothing greater than God. And there's only one foe that God is not going to present a foe against himself that he has to wrestle with. And you got a lot of people don't understand that this flesh is what has enmity with the spirit. That's who you're fighting against.
Right, and in that, and even as you said, you learned under Rav Nefahamin, you know, we understand that the Netaru, which are the forces,
yeah.
what you know, the Christians would call angels, or the spiritual
mm-hmm.
characteristics of, you know, that lie dormant in the world, that lie dormant in ourselves. Those are the things that we have to be careful of, because if we're not pure in our heart, we will be opening up ourselves to these many different forces to now use us rather than us utilizing the forces. You understand? And
mm-hmm.
even as you're talking
mm-hmm.
about in divination, if you ain't at the right place when you divining on something will use you rather than you using that for a benefit. You know, you have to be very,
yeah.
you know, clear. Your consciousness has to be very, you know, on point. You have to have good intent. You know, unless you're just evil yourself, and there are those characters out there that are, you know, they are the embodiment of the things that are bad, that are negative. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they,
mm-hmm.
you know, they, what they say, they bust hell wide open in the, you know, in the metaphorical phrase, but, you know, in actuality, you know, they are workers of the lower nature rather than being
mm-hmm.
workers of the things we associate, whether it be Offset, whether it be Haru, whether it be Asir, and their good coming, you know, they
and, you know,
be working
that,
for the Lord.
That you mentioned, that tome tree of life that Rana Nefer teaches about, start at the animalistic stage at your lower extremities, but your whole ultimate goal is to work your way up to the spiritual realm, and that might be at your third eye where the indigo is. You basically, whatever level you come here at, that's the type of work you have to work your way up the spiritual ladder.
That's
a lot
right.
of people are working in the reptilian stage. They're still at the lower level reptilian stage, and they don't have a clue that that's the animalistic survival stage. As we bring families together, they may say, you may have a black sheep, and you may be always in trouble. Nobody may know about his chakras and where he's at spiritually. He may have come here surviving, doing whatever he could to get by. When we could tell him, you don't have to do that. You got a great cooperative worker who actually cooperates with you. That's why we can call ourselves God, because God puts his being within us, and we cooperatively work together as one. Then we become that small g with the big. We can work together as if we're gods. And people are like, well, why are you calling yourself God? Because eventually you must climb up the ladder of the spirituality to become one with God. And they don't know that. So they're not striving, you know, for that process of coming from the animalistic to the spiritual. And that's what you can teach families when they come together. You know, there are some that nobody won't put their hands on. Oh, he's wicked. He's always in his stuff. But you can see the good in that person, because God has to shine through in all of us. You just have to, if a person been through a lot and they keep getting buffered and buffered, God is going to start showing up. The prerequisite for God to show up is when you have issues and you have problems, that's when he shows up. And when you're basically ready to throw your hands up and say, I give up, that's when God is going to show up, because he's already been placed there. We just have not had enough experiences to bring forward, you know. So I see that a lot of people need so much, and family members are not looking at it like that, you know. And ladies and gentlemen, with the family here, we're talking about some of the things we can do to better ourselves and the family, about turning away from those who are in our family who might be claimed as being the black sheep. But make sure we go after that one that's lost, and make sure we pull them into the circle. Don't exclude them from family gatherings, and don't talk against them and denounce them and say that we don't acknowledge that person in our family. We all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, but we certainly have to understand that having gatherings and allow us to rub off on each other and to better ourselves. We're talking about ancestors, going, talking to our ancestors, bringing them into the fold, connecting them to the greater circle, planning family gatherings, coming together to show them they will know us by the way we love one another, not by the way we have strife against each other. It's easy to carry strife and hatred amongst yourself, but it's very difficult to develop a love, unconditional love, not just an agape love for a family member because he cares and you care. You must remember, we have to be very conscious to the blood. When each one of us to support each other, we must answer because the blood has told us to. The blood has prompted us to answer each other in assistance. And as we plan these gatherings, let's not play favorites. Let's not put mockery on one or two people that we're trying to denounce. Let's lift that person up where they belong, because just lifting that person up may renew their faith and change their whole character altogether. And we have people in our family that are down on their hard luck because everybody shunted them because they didn't finish school, make the kind of money that the rest of the family made. So this person has fallen into diverse situations where he's drinking all the time just so he could face you. He's smoking cane just so he could deal with himself. First of all, you have to guide to let that person know he is in right standing with God and that God honors all of us and we all have fallen short. And letting that brother know that when he comes to that gathering, he's one with the family, is new with the family. And that's why we have these family gatherings, to put people back into places that they belong. Some people fall out of fellowship with their family. Some people don't want to go to gatherings because they don't want to have to network with that loved one. And you got to get that out of your system. You have to learn forgiveness, because it is easier for you to benefit from forgiveness than the person you won't forgive. Because that's to get that prosperity, and it's really up to you to benefit from forgiveness. The hating will go on in their life, but you will be suffering. So we've got to have more opportunities where we invite each other and we perform ritual. And we have people participate in ritual, and we explain to them that it is our ancestors that will make the way clear for us, that will clear the atmosphere. And don't forget, we with the universe. The universe is out to help us, and it wants to help us, but you got to let the universe. It's very vital that we should not get entangled in our material stuff and things and think that we're much more higher than we ought to be and go about our business thinking that our money has made us, because sure as your money has lifted you up, it can tear you down as well. But it's very vital that we should not forsake ourselves together. And that is a scripture. Do not forsake the gathering of yourself together, because they, by the way we love one another, they will acknowledge us as black people by the way we bless one another. And let it be said that you can know those black people over there by the way they love one another. Look at the way they embrace each other. Look at the way that they give to each other. And we must understand that all other groups that are minorities developed a way with one another, that they would lay down their lives for each other. And we no longer want to clap the gun on each other. We no longer want to spill the blood of our loved ones in the street, because we have a debt to pay. We've been called for a higher price than this. We have a commitment and a contract, and we ask to come here. And it certainly shouldn't be to desecrate our. And don't let nobody fool you about that indigenous aboriginal stuff, where they're making you think that you're tied to North America and excluding you from all of the grace and mercy that awaits you in Africa. Grace and mercy has been put there for those who were stolen away from that continent. And when you go back, grace and mercy will be restored to you. And don't let anyone tell you that that's not our home. Don't let anyone tell you that slavery never existed and that this is all that there was. It's a brainwashing. You shouldn't fall prey for that. And also that DOS, descendants of slaves, don't fall prey to that. They are trying to get us in any way possible to avoid us from going back to our homeland, because that is where everyone is striving to be, is in Africa. Even the Europeans in Europe are here in Africa to evade the ice storm that's coming in Europe. And it is coming. Objective. So we must take our proper places in our motherland, and we must position ourselves to gain that continent and stop sitting here waiting for the North America to fall in our lap. If all of those treaties were broken for us before, they're still broken. They're not going to reunite and give us any form of money. They're trying their best not to give reparations. But sitting here and argue with them back and forth about reparation. We can make our homeland in Africa. We can settle in Africa. There's plenty of raw riches and minerals that await us there. And we cannot spend the rest of our life waiting for somebody to give us something that they stole from us. And now that their continent is, you better believe it, they're going to be fighting to go back to Africa to take our land and our places. But we can't, okie doke. We've got to be awoke and know what's going on and understand that family reunions are important. We must build our nation. We must talk about nation time and bring people together so we can plan. We get to Africa, the motherland, how we will unite together as a nation. One nation. But we certainly cannot do this if we're falling for all of this stuff about we're giving you some land here in America, we're going to give you your status. No, they're not. They're not going to give it to us. They're not going to hand us. They're fighting under every circumstance. Whatever we get, we're going to have to take it by force. But let us, the celebration of our ancestors, and it is up to us as the living to stay in contact with our dead, to call their names, to position their pictures, and to create timelines of when they were here and what they did, us to create that. Then the ancestors will be pleased with us, and they will say, well done, my servant. And then you will see the hand of God upon our lives. I want to thank you so very much for going with me on this little faith walk. Hold tight. We're going to go to commercial. Thank you, for, ladies and gentlemen. We are here talking about developing our family tree for our ancestors, elders, going out to interview them, gathering facts and information for our timeline. And we're talking to those young people out there who don't know their heritage, who don't know anything about us, gathering some facts and recording your conversation, making sure that you document the date and the time that you spoke to them, and also gathering pictures. Send an email around to all your family members and ask them if they have old pictures that they for your handbook that you're putting together for your family. And gather these pictures and put dates and names so that you'll be able to circulate this handbook around when you have your family reunion. And get on the committees if your family should ask you to. Get on the committee and support this effort. This is for your bloodline, cause, blood, answers. It's very vital that you should understand that you can only be as strong as your nation is. You can help your nation to be strong by acknowledging who you are. And I don't mean going around as it is aboriginal. That's great. We know that. But we came here by some force, through a boat, through a ride here on a ship, some kind of way we came to the North American area. Around just saying that we're indigenous to this land. We have to have come from some continent like Africa. So why not give Africa the actual contribution for the fact that we came from there? Keep saying descendants of slaves. We don't have to say that. That is not getting us anywhere. We need to really look at where we came from and where we can potentially go back to. And we want to make sure that our grandparents in our lives, give them a spot where they can speak on the podium when you have your family gathering. Make sure you have a senior or elderly there and ask for permission. Do I have permission to speak? Make sure you get the permission. Upon getting permission to speak, then speak and then ask the elder to give their input on their longevity on this face of this earth. It's very vital that we understand that rituals are in order, some type of libation ritual during your actual ceremony to talk about those ancestors that have gone on before you and those new babies who have returned in the form of an ancestor. We want to make sure that we acknowledge and pay homage, and we're going to do that now. Thanksgiving is the light of my life and is the highlight of my life. Giving honor to Oumala, who I knew, who is the owner of death and who has the ability to prolong death and hold death off. I give honor to Oumala. I also give honor to Yamanye, the mother on my head. I give honor to Obatala, my father who sits on my head. And while giving honor and accolades, I say, Ashe. I give honor to my deceased loved one, Harvey Esserly Pope. I give honor to Aunt Ish. I give honor to Aunt Ruby. I give honor to Michelle Harvey, Michael Harvey. I give honor to Louise Lord. I give honor to Ludell James. I give honor today, and I call my ancestors that they will pick me up and make me strong. I give honor to my heroes and heroes. I give honor to Madam. I give honor to the Honorable Zora Neale Hurston. I give honor to Maya Angelou. I give honor to Sheikh S. Diop, Dr. Martin Luther King, Sweet Coretta King. I give honor to these heroes and sheroes that they might bring me the stamina I need and show me how to knit myself back together with my ancestors as I begin to pull their names down and their dates of expiration expire, as I begin to plan for the family reunion, the gathering, the great gathering in my Father's name. I thank you that I have acknowledged you, ancestors, and thank you for giving me the go-ahead to go forward with this. And I give honor and all the praise, and I say, Ashe, Ashe. So be it, so let it be done. Now, ladies and gentlemen, can pick you up and make you strong. And you must call as far as you can in back of yourself to call each one of them, as they will prepare the way for you. And that never think that it's your good deeds that have gotten you here. It's the sum total of who you are as an to place their cosmic records in your being. You might draw from them and you might adhere to them. We'd like to thank you, each and every one of your families who are represented here today, that we may not forget that we have a path of Crete on this land. We have those materials now. Now appoint your teachers and let your and work with you in the family so that you begin this process and you complete what you have been so desperately needed to start. We thank you so very much, and we want to remind you, don't forget to pray and call on your God, because they will make you strong. Oh, God.